Psychedelic.
Psychedelic.
By Humphrey Osmond. He wrote it in a letter to the English writer Aldous Huxley. Huxley was living in California at the time, experimenting with drugs. According to Osmond, the word meant mind manifesting.
Nearly 10 years later, the word was used again. It became the word for a whole movement. Music, attitudes, clothes, and once again, drugs. The movement started in California, and grew, some say degenerated, into the peace, love, hippie movement, and the rest is history, waiting to be relived.
I was Jacqueline.
Genes.
Psychedelic.
It's been called San Francisco science fiction music, psychedelic heavy metal, subterranean modern. It's a long way from the first wave of psychedelic pop that rolled out of California in 1965. In those days, the technology was simpler. Echo, fuzzbox, wah-wah, feedback, and phasing. In the 70s, English bands like Cabaret Voltaire and Throbbing Gristle began to experiment with electronics, mixing them with all kinds of non-music noise, sounds from the street, recorded on cassette, TV commercials, film soundtracks, now known as found sound. Eno added them to My Life in the Bush of Ghosts.
Chrome added them too. But their music had something else, what you could call a hangover from that first psychedelic era.
Our interview is with Damon Edge, for whom psychedelic music never really went away.
No. Yeah, well, I mean, people have said that. We don't really notice it. It's just, you know, some people say we sound European, you know. Some people say, hey, there's something about this West Coast thing in your sound. You know, but I don't hear any West Coast bands that sound like us, so I don't know what they're talking about, you know, unless it's something in the rhythm or something. I don't, you know, I mean, I myself and Helios, I can speak for him about this, is we were both heavily influenced by, you know, the psychedelic movement, you know.
Yeah.
We liked a lot of the ideas more than a lot, most of the realities, you know, but the ideas of exploration and tonal differences and getting kind of a aura about your music more than just a song, but creating sort of a real dimensional sort of 3D kind of space with music, you know, and to do that in terms of song and rock and roll, you know, seemed to have a really appealing power physically as well as you know, mentally, psychically, you know.
Right.
And that's sort of what we're doing, you know. I don't say we're trying, because we're doing it.
Psychedelic.
Metal from the album Blood on the Moon.
Yeah.
couldn't make the transmissions go. The aliens had some primitive gadgetry that kept screwing everything up.
Until 1981, Chrome's music couldn't be played live. All their albums were made in stages by two people playing everything. Now there are four people, Damon Edge and Helios Creed from the first Chrome band, plus a rhythm section, John and Hilary Stench. So, Damon Edge now only plays one instrument, the Moog Liberation, and sings.
For me, I was always sort of inspired. One of the periods that I liked besides the psychedelic movement and some classical movements was the surrealistic movement. And I was reading an article about the Shah of Iran in 1930, who had commissioned a Paris Deco artist to invent air conditioning for his car. And that's how air conditioning was invented, because the Shah wanted air conditioning. So after that, he was so impressed. He said, well, build me this really far out mansion. So he said, okay. And the guy stuck a lot of chrome in it. And I was just in a doctor's office. I was looking in the magazine, and it just seemed to sort of give me a sense of design. It seemed to the metal itself is very high class. It's very stated. It's very minimal, and it has something deeper about it too. You know, it reflects.
Extended concentration. So why not take a flight to Altair and get into some 37?
Damon Edge and Helios Creed waited 4 years before they dared to try and play their chrome stuff live. And when they got their first gig, it wasn't in the psychedelic dungeon in San Francisco. It was 6,000 miles away at a workers' festival in the Italian city of Bologna.
We'll be right back.
our first gig. I told a guy, there was a guy afterwards, you know, after he'd seen everybody, you know, the whole crowd just freaked. And, you know, and we had been playing, it was a three-day festival, and being competitive, of a competitive nature that I am, I was really pleased when the national Italian newspaper came out the next day and said we blew the shit out of everybody that was there, because while we were getting a lot of art kind of bands, you know, they didn't have any beat, you know, and then there was some sort of straighter kind of punk kind of stuff. They had beat, but they didn't have anything going on to get you out there, you know. I don't know. There was nobody like us, so we felt pretty good. And there was a journalist who had been following us from 78. You know, he used to be a disc jockey, and he'd been playing our records in Bologna from 78 and stuff. And the day he came over to the hotel after the gig, and he said, when was your first gig, you know? And I said, hey, you really want to know? He goes, yeah. You know, he was talking about 78, you know, when you used to play in 78, you know, hey, listen, let me tell you a secret, you know. And I said, you're not going to believe me. And I said, you want to know what my first gig was? And he looks at me and says, yeah. I said, you really want to know? He goes, okay. I go, last night. He just, God, man, his eyes just went about 3 feet out of on the floor or something, you know. Because we didn't come off like that, you know, at all. Because, I mean, we're already so confident, you know, that about what we do that we didn't, you know.
This is where I meet Chromium, you see. I get on board and there he is with the most beautifully sculptured droids I've ever seen, laying in a deck and filling them up.
This is where I met Chromium, you see.
You actually get a rhythm section? Was it just simply to play live, or did you feel that you and Helios couldn't do the bass and drums properly?
Well, I don't know if we felt we couldn't. I wouldn't put it like that, but I mean, it might be sort of true. I mean, we had kind of burned out on playing everything, you know, and it was there was something we couldn't get. And that was the real feeling of playing live. The only thing we could do was create this great feeling on record, but we were never in it. You know, if you actually had a band that could play some of the stuff we were playing earlier, that stuff was live and you were actually playing it, you'd just be, you know, crazy in your brain to be doing that, you know? And so we wanted to get sort of that feeling, you know, and it just took us a long time to actually find two people that we wanted, you know, to play with and that could play with us, you know. Helios and I have been the nucleus ever since, you know, the real beginning. The very first Chrome album Helios wasn't on. And as soon as that was over, Helios and I met, and in getting in contact, all other people around us seemed meaningless, you know? And after that, Alien Soundtracks, Half Machine, Lip Moves, the stuff on Submod from the Ralph thing, Read Only Memory, In Worlds, Red Exposure, we had listed some other weird names on the albums to give the impression that we were a live band, because we thought that people would think that was really more hip. And since nobody knew who we were anyway, it didn't seem to matter. You know, we just listed ourselves first. But nobody else existed, you know?
So John L. Cyborg is
doesn't exist, John L. Cyborg, you know?
Leave Notes from the 1977 album Alien Soundtracks. John Lambdon, electric and acoustic guitars, electric violin and bass. Gary Spain, bass, electric violin, glass and electric guitar, Moog and lead vocal on ST-37. Hilius Creed, electric guitars, lead vocals, bass and TV. Damon Edge, drums, Moogs, electric waterphone, tape effects, lead vocals on Android and Ferro Chromium, and guitar on Pygmies. Machine guitars, organ, booklars, Moogs, barbecue and industrial percussion, electrified, drums and tape effects. Hilius Creed, lead vocals, rhythm guitars, bass, lead guitar, bells and bowed guitar. John L. Cyborg, data memory.
John L. Cyborg doesn't exist,
John L. Cyborg, you know?
You don't know what's it for.
This is where I met Chromium, you see.
He recognizes me from the Musicology Awards last year. He invites me over, and we do up the droids and hit bass. He's been real chummy and all, and I'm just ripped. And I forget my defenses for a moment.
As soon as we started working together on Alien Soundtracks, the results were so obvious, you know? And, you know, things started going on for us immediately. We'd been together 6 months when stuff just started flying, you know? And both of us had been played with a lot of different people and been different situations and had always sort of been looking for something that was really real, you know? And you didn't have to sort of force it or make some relationship or tell this guy, hey, I really think we should do this. And, you know, there was just, we just had this really feeling about the whole thing. You know, we both liked the rhythm, we both liked this a certain electronic aspect, and it was all together, you know, and it was perfect. Filios is incredible to me.
Then I'm rolled down the aisle, and he recognizes me from the Musicology Awards last year. He invites me over, and we do up the droids and hit bass. He's being real chummy and all, and I'm just ripped, and I forget my defenses for a moment.
In the early days, every song was almost a conceptual, every song was a new concept on how to write a song. I mean, we were doing song. I mean, if you took an album like Alien Soundtracks, you said, well, how'd you write the first one? We'd say, well, we did the guitar and the drums, and then we added the bass and the keyboard and then the vocals. And you'd say, how'd you do the second one? We did the bass and the drums, and we added the guitar, and then we added the vocals, then we cut it up and added some TV, and then we recorded this next part and spliced that on. I'd do the third song, you know, we put a drone on, then after that we listen to it, and then I put the drums on, and then we add some vocals, then we put the bass. You know, I mean, it was just so, we did so many things, you know, we had to approach songs so differently in terms of what instrument was even going down first, because we found it broadened our perspective of music, you know, the actual feelings we could get from different approaches, you know. Yeah. Yeah. And after finding all those feelings available, not that we found every feeling, but we're much more aware of where we can go now. And actually, we didn't even know about playing live until about 6 months ago when I bought this thing that I'm talking about, the Moog Liberation, mm-hmm. you know, because I had no instrument that I wanted to play live. So we weren't going to play live. And then we found this. You know, I know who I am when I play music, you know, because nobody ever told me anything, you know. Like going to art school and learning how to paint or something, you know, shit, you know, that, I couldn't paint anymore, you know. You learn so much stuff, you don't even know who you are, you know.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I know who I am when I play music, you know, because nobody ever told me anything, you know.
He's being real chummy and all, and I'm just ripped, and I forget my defenses for a moment, and happen to mention this business with the diversion fleet, and he comes on real thick.
It's a little thick sometimes for some people on music, you know. There was a guy in Bologna when we did this gig, and he said, you know, he was playing your records on the radio show, and this was like in 78. And he said, I got a call from this woman at a hospital, and she had recorded my show, and she was working in some sort of brain therapy or something, and she ran our music through a brain scanner, and it came out with brain waves like somebody that had just been in a car wreck. And so he said, oh, that's really interesting. You know, he didn't know what to say. She called up the station, and so she called him back about a week later, because she had had this woman come in that was in a car wreck, and her brain waves were the same as some song. I don't know what song it was. And she gave it to her. You know, she pumped some chrome into her after she'd been in this car wreck, and she got better. She got very soothed, got very calm and everything, you know. And I don't know what that means, but it,
the 1978 EP, Read Only Memory. The next thing I know, I wake up in this box made out of the planet's crust.
punk doesn't interest me too much at all, even though we have some of that element, because the actual gut level punk is just completely boring to my brain. It doesn't do anything to me, you know. I'm just like an old 90-year-old woman when I hear a punk band. All sounds the same to me, man, you know. But everybody, you know, a lot of people say, hey, well, you're a punk band, you know, we're Uptown punk, you know. But it's not, my ears, we don't sound like that, you know. You know, it doesn't do anything for me. Doesn't, you know, there's no punks, you know, get off on chrome, you know, which is good. So maybe we're doing something very healthy for the whole movement, is to, you know, get a little bit of feeling outside, you know, with that, you know, there's a little more 3D about it. It's not just completely rigid attack without any relief, you know?
Yeah.
Because without that, it just doesn't feel right to me, you know? It's got a little bit of romance in it to me, or some of our stuff, you know?
Interested in this romantic connection. How do you see, I don't see you really as a romantic band. How do you see yourselves as a romantic band?
Well, I mean, I think I think we are. I know Helios and I are both very kind of attracted by old things, you know? Because we are now, and we're using modern equipment and things like that, only because we're now using the modern things now, you would say, well, this isn't romantic. I mean, it's not like we're trying to be romantic means, 1600, 1800 or something. That's not what it means, you know. It just means the way you feel about it and the way you approach it, you know. If it really has something and people look at it in 10 years, they might say, you know, gee, that's really, you know, something, you know, we might be termed classical. We might have done something 10 years from now that's termed in a classical sort of style, like you know. And the way that we felt about it and the feelings we had behind what we were doing could be romantic.
Yep.
Because to say it's industrial, so it's not romantic, it doesn't compute to me.
It can be both.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, in a way, that's what a lot of psychedelic music was, that it was both.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
In that sense, you plugged yourself into that music of the psychedelic era.
Now. Yeah. Well, I mean, people have said that. We don't really notice it.
Do you think there's ever likely to be, across the board, a psychedelic revival on the West Coast, like the initial movement that occurred in the late 60s?
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, I would be very surprised if anything like that happened in a big way. God, there's so many things going on now musically, you know. There's so many branches of, you know, categories or something like that it would seem pretty impossible that there would be a large psychedelic movement, but there's that influence in a few bands that I've noticed, you know. And I think it's better like that.
And this box made out of the planet's crust, and I'm still a bit dizzy. Then comes this monitor with his digitals on the blink, and I can see he hasn't been serviced in at least 3 evolutions. So I bet he's head in with the accommodations and makes the light flares. And on the way, I run into this old philosophical type with the one good eye left,
giving me everything is cool, everything is one look.
And just before he starts to say something,
I tell him he'd better watch out for his destiny, just to throw him off. And you know, it was funny, because it worked and he shut right up.
Damon Edge was talking in San Francisco to Bruce Elder. The music was from Chrome's albums Alien Soundtracks, Half Machine Lip Moves, Red Exposure, Blood on the Moon, and the EP Read Only Memory. Of these, the only one released locally was Red Exposure. This track is the title track from Blood on the Moon. The story was included as an insert with the album Alien Soundtracks. But for more information, contact Siren Records, 625 Post Street, San Francisco, California, 94109. United States.
was 1981, and this lot's 1967.